Hi, today's January 6, 2019. This is MobileViews Podcast 282. Happy New Year. We've got the good Dr. John Westfall back from his super secret winter mission. And we had a technology misfire. You know, we were recording for about, 10 minutes maybe?
Yeah. And so we already know exactly what we want to say for the next 10 minutes.
Yeah, it's kind of, it'll be like, you know, deja vu all over again. Okay, here we go. So the first thing I wanted to mention for the second time is that my Chromebook got a Chrome OS update that turns on Smart Lock. And what that means is I can use my Android phone, in my case a Pixel 2, to unlock my Chromebook. But it's, I don't know, I guess it's smart, but it's maybe not as convenient as I hoped. I thought that, and I guess it works the way it should. And I thought maybe if the phone was within some distance of it, you know, say Bluetooth distance of it, which is about 10 meters max, that it would just unlock due to its presence. But what you got to do is actually safer. You have to use your the fingerprint reader on your Android phone, or your Pixel 2 in my case, to unlock the phone first, and then you can click on your name / picture ID on the login screen to unlock it without typing in a password. Not quite as convenient as I hoped. You know, you now I got to remember, you know, unlock my phone, do this, do that. But yeah. It's a step forward.
Well, it seems like I was just telling you that the big problem, I think, with using devices to unlock other devices is that you have to ensure that the device that you are using as your key is logged in or authenticated in some way, because right. You obviously wouldn't want one locked phone unlocking something else,
right?
Because someone could just grab your phone and then go use it. So. Right. I get why you have to unlock it, but the only device I've seen that actually works effectively for that is an Apple Watch.
Yes.
Because it stays unlocked as long as it stays on your wrist. But otherwise, you've got kind of, I don't think you save much time logging in, because you're still logging into something. It's just that you're logging into your key instead of logging into the device that the key will unlock.
Right. Unless you have a super long, cryptographically strong password. And, you know, I mean, like a really long one that nobody can remember, including yourself. It might be a little faster, but yeah, I agree. The easiest thing is still unlocking a MacBook with an Apple Watch, in my opinion.
That does remind me, though, of a place I was at a few years ago that, this was, I will say, 10 years ago, and it was by some IT folks that probably should have known better, but mm-hmm. didn't. The web app in question only looked at the first 7 characters of your password.
Ooh.
And we're talking about a big name in the space at the time. So this was not just like a homegrown web app. Yeah. But it would only look at the first 7 characters. And I found this out after typing in a long, secure password and realizing that I knew that I had screwed it up.
Right.
But it's still logged in anyway.
Because you got the first characters wrong? I mean, you got the first 7 characters correct, I mean.
Yep. Yeah. So after that, when I had people around, I would just say, hey, watch this. And I would type in the first 7 characters and then I'd mash the keyboard for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And it would lock just fine. So, you know, authentication is a tricky, tricky subject.
It is. It is. Oh, and I don't think it's something we're going to solve anytime soon, or somebody else will solve anytime soon. All righty. Next up is something I wanted to ask, or I wanted John's opinion, since he is a university professor, and it's this. So PepsiCo is partnering with University of Pacific, or I assume they're partnering, because they're going to put in robots that deliver snacks to college students. I have some concerns about this for the kids, because of, you know, the dreaded freshman 15, where freshmen are said to gain 15 pounds in their first year because they don't have adult supervision and they're kind of eating and drinking what they want when they want. And you know, I'm sure it's not true for all kids. I don't think my daughter gained 15 pounds her freshman year, but well, professor, what do you think? What do you, you know,
freshman 15 hopefully doesn't become the freshman 50. So, you know, as it does seem like I just was telling you a few moments ago, it's very interesting what students complain about. They complain about having to go to different places and complain about having to park too far away from where they think they should be able to park and all that. But I've never heard them complain about, gee, it's just too much work to go get food. So I don't think that this is going to necessarily enable students to eat more than they already would. But I do know that at certain schools and at certain times, I've wondered if my students are eating, you know, regularly, because a student's life can get pretty hectic and crazy. And despite what I think a lot of my colleagues as professors would like to tell ourselves, my students are way more busy than I am during the semester. I mean, I have a few classes that I teach, and I've got my job and things like that, but they've got typically 5 to 6 classes that might not always be very related to each other, that and then they're always trying to do, you know, extra things on top of that, plus most of them have jobs. So I think sometimes the worry about they're going to eat too much should be outweighed by the it's good they'll actually have something to eat instead of just forgetting to eat for a couple hours.
That's a good point. That's a good point. Okay, so the next item on our list that we've already talked about, because something happened to our recording, first 10 or 12 minutes recording, is that Google has gotten approval from the federal government, the U.S. federal government, to use an overpowered, and the reason why they needed approval is they're using an overpowered radar. You know, normally you wouldn't allow this much on a kind of a personal radar device. It's called Soli, S-O-L-I sensor. And they got approval from the FCC to use it at higher power levels than currently allowed. So this allows gesture type control, like in the old Tom Cruise movie, Minority Report. And, you know, so it's motion sensing radar technology, and you can, you know, snap, I would presume you can snap your fingers, or the Reuters article describes pressing an invisible button between the thumb and index finger, or a virtual dial that turns by rubbing a thumb against the index finger, in its website. Not in its website, but in it, you know, Google describes on its website, they could operate a smartwatch, scroll through music just by motioning using a system. So the thing that's different from Minority Report, which, as you may recall, was in a huge room with a giant screen, is this is on very personal devices like smartwatches and phones and gaming devices and things like that. So I'm looking forward to it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking forward to it.
Anything that Google can use to kind of revive their wearables and even their their phone market right now. I mean, Google's sort of reaching the point where I was having a conversation with some tech friends over Christmas, and I said, you know, I'm in this weird situation where 10 years ago, if you had told me that I would feel that out of the big three tech companies of Apple, Microsoft, and Google, that I'd feel like Apple was basically staying static, even though I think we'd like them to go, you know, kind of more ambitious. Microsoft, I think, is doing really well, and Google, I think, is going in the wrong direction in a lot of ways. And so anything Google can do to kind of come up with something cool that makes us go, yeah, Google again, versus, oh, Google. So,
well, you know, I don't feel too sorry for Google. I mean, they seem to be making enough money.
They're making enough money. I just feel sorry for consumers, because I feel like we're missing out on what could be happening if Apple and Google were innovating more. I think Microsoft, ironically, is the one that once they kind of embraced the age of, you know what, we're just going to, instead of trying to promote just our own stuff, we're going to be cross-platform, we're going to be everywhere, we're going to kind of push things like Office 365 and all that. I think Microsoft did very well with that decision. But I don't think Apple and Google are kind of having the same level of prosperity in the consumer space.
Well, you know, it's funny, even though Microsoft was the, you know, the big loser in the mobile space, I mean, they basically had to give up on their dreams of mobile devices. Google and Apple, which, you know, and Google presumably is the big winner and Apple's a secondary winner in terms of market share, they're both kind of reached peak phone. I mean, there's, you know, Apple recently announced that they, you know, were going to miss their mark, and their stock took a hit last week, and it was pretty ugly. Google, you know, tried to launch a Chromebook tablet, and that, let's just say it has mixed reviews. I mean, I really wanted to buy a Pixel Slate, but I'm glad I didn't, because the reviews have not been not been positive overall. So it's a little disappointing for me as a Chrome OS fan.
Let's think about in that same period of time in 10 years what Microsoft has done. I think now OneDrive is probably the best mobile sharing, file sharing platform out there in terms of things that build into it, plus ease of use. And Office 365 continues to add features. I get Office 365 through my work place because we switched over to that campus-wide about a year ago. Mm-hmm. But before, even with it being through work, I actually pay for a home subscription just because I really like some of the features and the cohesion. So, which I should mention, if you are interested in buying Office 365, mm-hmm. you do not have or you have a renewal coming up, remember that there are people on eBay, reputable people, that sell keys for renewal. I picked up one about 2 weeks ago to renew mine, and instead of paying $99 a year for the family Office 365,
right,
I ended up getting it for about $60.
Huh.
So if it seems too good to be true, it probably is. You'll see people that are, you know, they have keys from other regions that are, they're selling them for $20 or $15 per year. That's a little too good to be true. But then you can find resellers and you can find vendors that have keys that they bought presumably in bulk that they're selling for, you know, $60 or $70, which gives you a nice $40 off or something.
That's interesting. And then I think I remember seeing maybe at Sam's Club or Costco that they had, it wasn't quite $60, but it was, I think I saw like $85, not renewal necessarily, but just a Office 365 pack. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's like $14 off retail or something. I just happened to move from personal, Office 365 personal to Office 365 family a while back, because after my daughter graduated from college, she didn't have a, she didn't have their Office 365 as you do at your university, so I had to go buy a family plan, move up for my single plan. It's you know, it's funny. I should have just given her mine because I hardly use Office 365 to be honest. At home, at work, I use it every day, of course, but that's a different story. Okay, so anyway, did we talk about Minority Report? Yep, we talked about that. Okay, now. So, John, you bought stuff?
I have had some interesting technology upgrades in the last couple of weeks. So I might have mentioned on the last podcast I was on that a friend of mine offered to buy my Apple Watch Series 3.
Yep.
And so I she twisted my arm. I sold it at a nice discount for her, and then I bought myself a Series 4, which I've been very happy with. I would say it's a noticeable upgrade from the Series 3, which is frustrating for people like me that had jumped initially from Series 0 to Series 3,
right?
Thinking, okay, I'm going to make a giant upgrade and then I won't upgrade for a while. But Series 4 with the slightly bigger screen and the modular watch faces, or the infographic watch faces, I guess is what they're referred to. So infograph, modular, and infograph. They are very nice, and I do think it's worth considering an upgrade, especially if you're on anything other than Series 3.
Yeah, I've got a 3,
If you're on Series 2, 1, or 0, it's definitely worth considering an upgrade. I've been very happy with it. The EKG function, or ECG
function. I was going to ask you about that.
So I was very nervous the first time I ran it because, you know, I haven't had an EKG at a hospital.
Right.
And so it was one of those things of, what is it? Is it going to tell me something that I don't want to know?
Yeah.
Even though I have not, you know, felt poorly or felt like I, you know, would need to have any sort of worry about that.
Right.
But I went ahead and I took the EKG, and I'm showing Todd what my EKG looks like.
Uh-huh.
This is actually one from this morning. And it told me that it doesn't show any signs of atrial fibrillation, so I'm happy about that. And I've been taking, maybe just because I'm weird, I've been taking some benchmarks every so often just so that I know what my heart rate looks like without any issue. But I do think it's a cool little feature. It definitely made me feel a little bit better about my heart health, even though as someone who is very overweight, I probably should not feel that great about my heart health. But, you know, It's something.
One more tool.
I like having it as one more tool in the arsenal.
Yeah. Now, what were you saying about the infographic watch face? Is that something I don't have on my Series 3?
Yes, it is unfortunately something you do not have.
Now I feel sad.
I will show you a picture of what it looks like.
Okay.
So it's basically those two watch faces that I'm showing you right now.
Okay, I see.
Everyone
that.
Else can go to apple.com and see the infograph. But basically...
They are nice.
So, yeah, they let you jam-pack a lot of information. There is the screen I'm showing Todd right now. There are eight different complications, because the four corners and then the four bubbles in the middle, plus complication that has the your schedule at the upper top of
what's
it.
The, so, what's the 23 in the kind of upper center? I don't get that number.
That's
the date?
This is just their example watch.
Oh, okay, got it.
Watch editing interface, yeah. No, you did not miss a time warp, and we're actually on the 23rd of a day.
You get to do Christmas again.
But yeah, I've been very happy with the Series 4, and I do think it's worth considering as an upgrade.
Okay, so the big things about the Series 4 are slightly bigger display, infographics, the heart thing, the EKG or whatever it is. I can never remember the difference between EKG and ECG, but one is head, one is heart, I think.
You're thinking EEG.
EEG, sorry, yeah.
ECG and EKG are basically the same thing. It just depends on what you want to call them.
Okay. And is that it? Are those the three things? Size?
Yeah, pretty much. The old bands still work just fine. If you look on the back of the watches now, they do all use a ceramic back. So even though I have the stainless steel version, I have the ceramic back on it.
Yeah.
Which my wife was one of the people who was very sensitive to the metal on the back of the Series 0 through 3. So it's something that in the future she may try an Apple Watch again because it doesn't have that metal back. But I will say, oddly enough, even though the screen real estate did not get much bigger, it seems more natural given the size of the watch.
Right.
I had never thought the bezels on the Series 3 were all that big.
Right.
But apparently, now that I'm looking at the Series 4, I'm going, wow, there was a lot of wasted bezel space.
Now, in any of those infographic watch faces, can you add a custom photo or anything, or still no?
No custom photos on that, but you still do have the regular photo watch faces that you can use.
All right. Because that's what I really want.
You can put your favorites, though. So if you have a favorite person, you can use their icon, and if you tap on them, then you can contact that person from the watch. But so whoever you've set in your iPhone is your favorites.
Yeah. Okie dokie. And you bought one more thing, I think?
Yeah, so because I'm just a glutton for spending a lot of money, another thing that I've been thinking about and toying around with the idea of, and I kind of talked myself out of and then talked myself back into, was upgrading my iPad Pro. Because I had the iPad Pro 10.5 since July of 2017, and I had turned it into basically my daily go-to device for pretty much everything. So I had the keyboard and the Apple Pencil, and I would use it in class for my lecture notes, for taking notes. I'd use it in meetings, use it pretty much everywhere. The iPad I bought had 256 gigs of RAM, which was more than enough for me to store movies and things like that on it. But it didn't have cellular. And I've been hearing for about the last year people talking about, you know, cellular is actually kind of worth it, especially, you know, it's just one less thing to worry about when you're going in and out of places. So I thought, well, maybe I consider that. So when the new iPad was announced, I looked at it. I thought, that's a nice upgrade. I kind of like it. Didn't know if I wanted it. And then over Christmas, finally talked myself into it. So now I have the 11-inch iPad Pro with the keyboard folio that Apple calls it and the new Apple Pencil and with cellular. And so I'm looking forward to over the next couple of months seeing if the cellular is worth it or not. Already I've had a few places I've gone. It was funny, I needed a SIM card, and I had to order one. And so there are already a few places this week where I took out the iPad and realized I didn't have coverage and went, gee, I wish I had that SIM card already. So we'll see. I'm very happy with it, but it's definitely a big investment. But for something I'm going to use every day, I think an investment worthwhile. And it is my first USB-C device.
Do you know how much the monthly is going to be for the LTE service?
For me on Verizon, it's going to be $10 a month.
Okay, that's pretty reasonable.
Tethers onto my existing plan.
Right. And you didn't want to tether it to your phone.
I've always had issues with tethering.
Hmm.
I don't know if I'm the only one. I can't imagine I am. But, you know, you go to settings, you go to Wi-Fi, you see your iPhone there, you hit the iPhone,
right,
and then
right.
9 out of 10 times I'd get an error saying could not turn on hotspot. And so then I would, hit it again.
Yeah.
Maybe the second time it would work. Maybe it took 2 or 3 tries. Eventually it would turn it on. But that, you know, that added a minute or two every time I wanted to use it.
Sure.
And then, of course, only stay active until, you know, you turned off the iPad and you would kind of disconnect after a
couple
minutes.
Yeah.
So it was one of those things where, yes, I could tether through my phone. Yes, it wouldn't cost me more money, but every so often those annoyances just add up. And I kind of had a revelation over Christmas where I was thinking about it and going, you know, sometimes the stress is worth the extra money to avoid. And even if it's a very little thing, like 2 or 3 minutes of extra stress a month, every minute can count in the world we're in today.
So. And it is only $10 a month, so.
Yeah, that was another big draw for it since I have an unlimited data plan. It just is $10 more.
Yeah.
And now the iPad can be used as a hotspot too. So that gives me some options. If I'm using my Surface Pro or something like that and I don't have internet, I can tether through the iPad.
Yeah. So now that you have a USB-C device, how do you feel about USB-C?
I've had no issues with it, and I bought a pack of aftermarket Anker USB-C cables I've had no issues with.
Yeah.
I don't particularly like the idea of having to switch over from Lightning to USB-C, and actually now I'm fractured because I have a few things that are still micro USB, but I think USB-C is the way of the future, so I'm fine eventually moving to it. I just have taken a while to jump in with my first device.
And have you bought a USB-C multi-charger? I think I have one that has one USB-C port and the rest are USB-A.
I have not. By my bed, I have an old Anker multi-charger that's 5 USB-A ports, and I've had that for 2 or 3 years now. So I've thought about upgrading that to the USB-C Anker version, but now that I have these USB A to C cables from Anker, I might just use those. Just use the existing ones.
And I have used that, and that works fine.
Mm-hmm.
I have one for my car, for my phone, that sort of thing. Oh, okay, just curious. And are you planning to buy any other USB-C devices?
Not in the near future. I'm not planning on buying any technology devices for a while in the near future.
Like a month or two?
Yeah. You and I were talking about some mutual friends that upgrade their devices quite frequently and purchase things. And I'm thinking, I got to stay away from that for at least a little while.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm hoping. I don't plan on upgrading my iPhone this year unless it's really, really great. Even though I'm on the 10 and I would be in the 2 year of the cycle, I think I want to hold off for another year or two on that. So I'm hoping that the next iPhone I get will be a USB-C device instead of Lightning. So
that's
I can slowly kind of phase out my Lightning devices over time. And I'm wondering now if the next AirPods will be USB-C. Because we've had all these delays for the new version of AirPods, and I'm wondering if that's because late in the stage it was a design change to go from Lightning to USB-C.
That's an interesting theory. I know I've been waiting for the V2 to be announced because, you know, I still don't have AirPods myself. And everybody who has them seems to like them, although I'm still a little leery about them falling out of my ears. But
I started carrying mine. I usually always left them in my bag, and actually one of the other things I'm trying for the new year is only carrying my iPad, not carrying a tablet or a computer back and forth to work.
Yeah,
computers I can leave there.
Right.
So I've started putting my AirPods in my pocket every morning, and I've used them a lot more than I ever did just because they're right there. So it's quite amazing how just the little bit of effort of having to find my bag and reach over and grab my AirPods out of it was apparently enough for me not to use them, whereas now I'll just reach in my pocket, pull out the AirPods, and start using them.
Hey, speaking of announcements, it's not in our show notes, but CES is coming up. I read through kind of an overview of what The Verge expects to see, and I didn't see anything that I found exciting. I mean, I'm sure if I saw something in person, I'd go, oh, that's kind of neat, and I'd like it, but I don't know. I haven't heard anything that says, oh, I can hardly wait for that announcement.
Yeah, I think we are reaching a point of tech plateau, and that's somewhat depressing.
Yeah.
As people who like technology, you and I are always searching for the next cool thing to play with. But the more, over the last 3 or 4 years, I think about it, the happier I just am kind of with my daily routine. And the little upgrades here and there are nice. I do appreciate new iPads and things like that, but I'm not pushing myself going, gee, I wish I had a device that did this or a device that did that.
Yeah. Well, I should mention something I bought / upgraded. Nothing as exciting as yours, but as you know, I have an iPad Pro 9.7 and an iPad Mini 4 that I have not updated from iOS 10.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can't run Civilization Revolution, my favorite game.
For reasons. You have decided that there shall be no upgrade.
So those two devices have remained in iOS 10 because I can't run Civilization Revolution after I upgrade. I think somewhere around the Christmas holiday week, there was a sale on Civilization 6, which mm-hmm. is the current desktop version. Well, same as the current desktop version. And it has been out for a while, but I didn't buy it because it was $60.
Mm-hmm.
But they had a sale for $15. So I said, well, what the heck? You know, and I spent 15 whole hard-earned dollars on this game instead of 60. So I felt like I had a deal at least. And, you mm-hmm. know, it is such a busy game, it's not fun. I mean, you have to do so much stuff. There's so much effort. And one of the great things about Civilization Revolution was it was really easy to play, you know, and still be enjoyable and challenging and all that stuff. But at any rate, I now have an iOS 12 compatible Civilization that's the current rev, and the people who have reviewed it, you know, I mean, end users, not reviewers, but you know, people who have bought the game in the iTunes store say it's just like the desktop version and all that kind of good stuff. So I will give it a chance one of these days. I played it, you know, like once during the vacation or something. And it's like, wow, this is a lot of work. But anyway, for $15.
It's interesting how games can turn you off completely if they're a lot of work. I've started playing Rebel Inc., which is from the same studio that makes Plague Inc.
Okay.
And it's a fun game, but thankfully it walks that line between being busy but not so busy that it's unenjoyable to play.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, and the tutorial, the problem with the tutorial is it's a really long tutorial, and I kind of got I got to do other stuff. But you can't save the tutorial game in progress and then come back to where you left off to finish the tutorial, so even that's kind of a lot of work. Anyway, I see you added two things in our show notes. Year in Pixels?
Yeah. So one of the things I decided to do this year to see how it worked is if anyone is a fan of bullet journaling, which is basically a paper-based journaling method, I have not really ever wanted to do bullet journaling because it's just really... I'm not that into paper, but I have noticed that there's this thing that they have called a year in pixels, where basically you have one page in your journal, and every day it's a grid, and every day you fill in a color based on how your day went. And so by the end of the year, you can kind of look over and see the average of your whole year and also how each day was. And so I thought, that might be a cool journaling idea.
That does sound interesting.
And so... then I thought, but I don't want it to be paper, so I found an Excel template. And now on my phone every night at 9 o'clock, I get a little reminder that will launch the Excel template. And then I can just kind of punch in a number between 1 and 5, depending on how the day was, hit enter, and then go to the next night. So I'm going to start that just to see how the idea goes. But I like the idea of getting more into journaling. It's just forcing myself to actually do it.
So is this literally just filling in a pixel, or is there more you got to do to... I'm looking
at
the app.
It's literally just filling in... Well, there are apps for it.
Yeah. I'm looking at one now. It's free.
Yeah. I wanted something that would sync. So I went with Excel because you know, yeah. Excel is Excel. So my template, I'll bring it up and show you. It's basically just a grid in Excel.
Yeah.
And every night I just punch in the number and hit enter, and it goes to the next night.
Hmm.
And you've got columns for the months, rows for the days.
Hmm.
I thought it'd be an interesting, and I customized it a little bit. I didn't like the basic colors, so I went in and changed the conditional formatting to be what I'd like. And yeah, so that's my my challenge to myself. Much like you did the doodle a day, I'm going to try to get more into journaling in 2019, especially since I have a lot of travel coming up and a lot of experiences this year that I want to be able to remember a little bit more vividly than just with my own memory.
Yeah, and I should note that the app from Bullet Journal called A Year in Pixels is free, although I'm looking at the in-app purchases. You can buy a Cloud Sync for $1.49. And, oh, all features plus Cloud Sync is $14.99, so it's not cheap. I'm not sure what all features is. But
yeah, I saw all those too around the 27th, 28th when I started thinking about what I was going to do, and that's when I thought, you know, I'm sure someone has made an Excel spreadsheet of this. And sure enough, I found that. And plus, I like the idea of Excel because then if I decide to do this for a number of years, it's all in one format. The only app that I will kind of trust to do journaling and such in that isn't kind of a mainstream app is Day One.
Yeah.
Which I've used for a few years now and I really like, and they seem to be reasonably easy to get things out of Day One if they would ever go away. So,
yeah, and I should note, just looking at the A Year in Pixels app, so it's a subscription system for the premium features. I guess that's a $14.99 or whatever a year, or you can do a monthly payment. So not cheap, and it's a yearly cost, but if it's important to you, you know, there you go.
Yeah, these subscription service crazy apps these days where, you know, they want a steady revenue stream. So instead of being able to just buy it once and be done with it, you have to have a subscription and keep doing that. I get why they do that.
Oh, sure.
And I understand it, but it's a huge turnoff. I want to be able to buy the features once. And actually, there's an app that I've mentioned on here, Working Copy, that actually I think figured out the good minimum between the two. So a lot of the subscription apps, their argument is, well, if you don't keep paying us, then there's no incentive for us to keep developing new features in the app because you've already bought all the features, so we're not going to make any more money off of people who bought in early.
Right.
Working Copy has an interesting hybrid model where if you buy the unlock for however much money it is, you unlock all of the pro features they have at that moment. They continue to add pro features as they think of them and as they develop them out, and you can buy incremental unlocks whenever you want. So if they come out with a new feature you like, you can buy kind of the roll-up package of all the unlocks up to that point. I thought it was an interesting idea for them to basically say, yeah, you've already got all the premium, but you get the premium as of this day, and as we add new features, at some point, if you really like to, you can upgrade more, but we're not going to make it sort of all or nothing. You either pay for all the premium features every year, or you don't get them at all.
Yeah. Yeah. And, of course, knowing John, and since it's in Excel, I expect him to statistics it to death.
Well, yeah, you can't do some that. Point. On a 1-5 rating, you can look for patterns and all that. So that is something I've thought about.
I'm really looking forward, not so much to your journal experience, but how you analyze it. I think that's what I'm looking forward to. I think that'll be fun, well, too.
The first step is making sure I actually keep journaling. So
well, that's the hard part, right?
Oh, yeah.
But it sounds like it's easy enough to do, the way you've got it set up.
Well, I did use Siri Shortcuts, which used to be the workflow app, so this is the most Apple of weirdness I've ever seen. Siri Shortcuts, you can create a shortcut, and then say you want it to run every night on the Reminders app. The only way to get it to hook into a reminder is to be on the shortcut page and then invoke Siri and say, hey, Siri, remind me about this. And if you do that, it will then add a little icon to your reminder. so that every night at 9 o'clock when my reminder pops up, I can tap on it and it will take me straight to the workflow where I can run Excel and all of that and pull up the file. But otherwise, you know, you want to get, when you're trying to do these things that are changing your life in a sense, you try to make them as low bar for participation as possible.
So. Right. Okay. And the last topic is a interesting question from John. Actually, something I've been wondering about myself. So go ahead, John.
So, I have an old point and shoot camera. It's a Panasonic Lumix from 2010. Yeah. It's got GPS built in. It's a very nice camera. But over Christmas break, I was traveling and I realized that my iPhone 10 takes almost as good, if not as good, photos as my Panasonic Lumix.
Right.
Really, I was using the Lumix because it supported, you know, Zoom and a few other things that my phone can't easily do. But, you know, you can pick up, and I actually do have one of these phone cases that has a variety of lenses on the back of it, and so you can just slide the lenses over that you would like to, and you've got telephoto, you've got wide angle, you've got some macro lenses, you've got a fisheye lens. And so it hits me that this particular case gets me almost, you know, everything that my Panasonic Lumix does. This next year, I'm going to be taking a number of vacations, a family vacation to Disney World and a couple of weddings and a ton of places where I'm going to try to go as minimally as possible. And so the question is, do I need a point and shoot or can I get away with my phone and perhaps an extra battery pack just in case my phone starts to die midday, which would take up the same amount of weight as a point and shoot.
So
I'm kind of in a quandary. I might try this one particular lens for a while and see how it works daily life.
How much? How many x zoom does the telephoto lens add to your camera? Because you can already get 2x in your 10.
And this one adds another 2x.
So it's 4x total.
4x zoom. Yeah.
Okay. So really, the only I shouldn't say that. I'm not a photographer, but. In my mind, the biggest difference is the zoom, the telephoto on a point and shoot, which, you know, nowadays is kind of tremendous. It's 30x or 40x or whatever versus 2x, 4x. So I would say that's not even battery life. Yeah.
So it's an interesting question on what would be in my best interest, but I don't know. We'll kind of. Explore this over the year, I believe.
I'm looking forward to what you learn, because here's something I've noticed over the last couple of years. I've used the Lumix, by the way, and it's a great camera. I switched back to a Canon point-and-shoot a couple of years ago, like maybe four. And a couple of things I learned over the ensuing years since then. Thing number one is about 4 years ago, I noticed that cameras no longer included a GPS option, which were getting fairly common at the mid-range or high end of the point and shoot. And, you know, by mid-range, I mean like a $300 or $400 camera. I guess that's high end too, but, you know, a $300 or $400 camera commonly included a GPS, and then they disappeared. And then in the last year, at least in the high technology shops I go to, like Costco and Sam's Club, point and shoot have disappeared altogether. The only point and shoot I think I've seen are like the waterproof ones with, you know, 2x zoom or something, or very little zoom. It's a very tiny camera, but it's waterproof and tough, and you can take it, you know, swimming and skiing and all those kind of places where it might get wet and bounced around. But other than that, they have no point and shoots anymore. They do have DSLRs, but no point and shoots. So it's becoming very difficult to find features like GPS and point and shoot, and now it's difficult to just find a point and shoot. My daughter tends to travel with both a phone and a point and shoot, and so do I, I guess. And so we were looking around for replacements, and it's hard to find one. And being in Hawaii, because of the whole battery shipping thing, I think some cameras won't even ship out here through Amazon, at least. So even ordering one has become an issue for us. It's kind of annoying. That said, you know, one of the things I found is, so my daughter graduated from college in spring of 2017, and I took my Canon with me, and I had an iPhone 7 back then, I think. Yeah, I think I had an iPhone 7. And I took a whole bunch of photos using both the point and shoot and the iPhone 7. And for her, the graduation picture we put on, you know, the little cards we sent out to friends and stuff. We used the photo I took using my iPhone because it was the best photo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the irony of the modern day smartphone camera.
And part of it is because, you know, I'm not smart enough to do the whole bokeh effect on a point and shoot. I'm sure you can, I just don't know how. And but the phone said, just use this setting. Mm-hmm. You know, you'll get the nice little sharp person in front and blur in the back. It'll look nice. And the iPhone is right. Sort of like the days when, you know, Steve's always right kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So it's been a challenge. And I should go look to see if any camera point and shoots ship to Hawaii now. Sometimes it changes. I know the other day I was looking at, it wasn't a camera, but I was looking at what was it? It was some kind of, it was like an emergency flashlight thing that also happened to have a US, it was a solar-powered flashlight USB, combo USB charger, I think, and won't ship to Hawaii because of the battery issue. So, if we have a power outage here, we're in deep trouble because we can't get batteries, we can't get rechargeables, we can't get solar panels. I don't know what's going on. We're just going to be using crank phones or something to make
phone calls. You're just out of luck.
Yeah. Okie dokie. Anyway, it is good to have you back, John. Hope you find your solution to your point-and-shoot thing. I think I'm going to go take a look at that year in pixels. That's kind of interesting. Although, like you, I don't think I want to spend $15 a year on it. And maybe we'll have some interesting stuff to discuss about CES on the next podcast. I kind of doubt it, but something interesting might be announced. Anyway, Happy New Year, John.
Happy New Year.